Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to be here today.
It is, isn't it?
It is. It is great to be here.
I think we always say that, don't we? And
Well, I think I start it.
And, well, but it's just so true.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was, as a matter of fact, I was driving along this morning, and I was thinking that there's actually not enough time in the day, not enough time in the my waking hours to say all the thank yous that I feel.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It was kind of a peak moment.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I was trying to remember the saint who practiced.
St. Teresa of Avila.
St. Teresa of Avila.
Yep, that was her whole spiritual practice, apparently. Uh-huh. Although I'm always suspicious of that sort of thing. I think she probably had a few other things going, too. But that was apparently the one that she felt was the most transformative for her,
yes.
Was simply, thank you.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yeah, and it's just, it's a great place to live.
It is a great place mm-hmm. to live.
Yeah.
Today's show, we're not live on the air. This is a pre-recorded show, so if you have a burning question, we ask that you wait until Sherry is back again live with us. You could also email us in the meantime to get that burning question out of your head and onto paper.
and then call in when we're talking about it.
Oh, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Hadn't considered that. Our email address is openair@kzsu.org. So feel free to email us if you have a question, if you have a comment, some feedback you want to send us. You want to say hi, tell us where you're listening from. We'd love to hear from you. Also, archives of all of the shows are available at Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com, spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. After this show at 6 p.m., DJ Decca has great world music, always the latest new stuff. I just shared with you a new CD from Africa that Decca played.
Yes, from a group in Bulawayo,
yes.
Zimbabwe.
Yes.
It's very exciting. It's, so, yes, I immediately wrote down that
yes.
address to get a hold of those folks and incorporate their music into some of the stuff that we're doing. Get a hold of them and mm-hmm. see what they're up to and
yes.
make contact.
Yes. That group's name is Insingizi, by the way.
Do you want to spell that? I would hate to go to my local, or maybe give them the website, huh?
Yeah, let me spell it for you. Insingizi. Insingizi, music in the Ladysmith tradition from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. And the website is www.arcmusic, that's arcmusic.co.uk. So check that out. It's great music. At 9 p.m., we have The Bot of Euphony, so stay tuned for that. Sherry, today's show, we're going to be talking about compassionate communication,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a good plan for the world, perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps I should start with myself instead of speaking for the world.
Well, you are the world. Let's face it.
We're all one.
Each one of us is. So,
yes.
Yeah, I think we can speak for our perspective on the world. And so compassionate communication, we have as one of the spokes in the Eightfold Wheel in our practice, compassionate speech that makes for clarity. And I mentioned to you, and I think you already had this information, that the monks are hard at work on a book on this subject.
Mm-hmm.
And because compassionate communication has been such a source of growth for them during this last year. It's taken the community of monks to a whole new place with themselves and in relationship with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so when one of the monks approached me, Anne approached me with this idea, I said, yes, and I want to write the introduction, please, because I had just been looking at why we don't practice compassionate communication. I'd been in a situation in my life that was very lacking in communication
mm-hmm.
and watching what happens when we don't communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So there's compassionate speech that makes for clarity, which is a noble goal. And the compassionate part, of course, brings in things like leaving egocentric karmic conditioning out of the conversation, owning our projections, coming back to center, attempting to speak from center, and we're going to have more clarity in our lives and in our relationship, because there's communication with oneself, as you mentioned, and then communication with the larger world. So, yes, very exciting topic.
Yes, yes. You mentioned this past year with the monks in terms of their compassionate communication. What was it about this past year that sort of brought them to a place where compassionate communication was really in the forefront?
Actually, it would be fun to talk with them about that, because what exactly happened with them, I don't know.
Yes.
With each one individually. But the focus turned from, I'm going to communicate with you and I will just deal with internally whatever is going on with me, and I will make an effort not to let you know what's going on with me internally. And I think they moved from, which of course, you know, is never a part of our practice, but we along the path we come to a lot of interesting conclusions, and certainly that's one that most of us would bring to it. Okay, fake it till you make it, act as if, self-improvement version of awareness practice. So all this stuff is going on with me. I'll do my best to act as if there's nothing going on. I'll try to fool you if I can, and then I'll communicate from that place. And of course, what we get over and over and over is just a mess, because actually I've turned my conditioned mind into the authority. So conditioned mind is going to tell me how to act and what to say and that sort of thing. And is going to – I'm going to collude with conditioned mind for it to protect me instead of just coming to center, coming to authenticity. And so there's a great deal of work happening in that area of acknowledging as part of the communication – what's behind the communication. Now, you know, a lot of us have run into different communication models in which there are things like feedback loops. So we're going to communicate, and my communication with you is giving you feedback about how I'm perceiving you. Which to me is just such a fast track to hell. And in the model that the monks are using, it's I will in my communication with you, I will be paying attention to what is operating in me, my movement between center and conditioned mind, and I'll be acknowledging that. And you will be acknowledging what is going on with you about that.
I see.
So that we have two things happening sort of on parallel tracks. Before conscious awareness, that one track is unacknowledged, and that's where the train wreck happens.
What's going on inside?
Yeah, what's going on
and
inside?
And not sharing that, or
yes,
yeah.
And you know, you can't be present and be colluding with conditioned mind. It's not. It's just not possible.
Right. It's shouting in your ear while you're trying to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so with this new model, we're talking about whatever it is that we're talking about. But what we're really talking about and what we're really looking at and acknowledging is what's going on with us as we attempt to communicate about whatever this subject is. And so then it's the communication really is happening on two levels, both of which are helpful, instead of both of which are taking us into another disaster.
Yes. So the two levels are I'm communicating about what's going on with me, and I'm sharing that with this other person that I'm interacting with.
Yes. Yeah. So the compassionate aspect is compassion for myself as I'm attempting to disengage from conditioned mind and get back here to center, to authenticity. Compassion for you, because I know you're doing the same process that I am. It's not – we're not any longer caught in this – well, this is happening to me, but it doesn't happen to you. Or I think you're probably really identified, and I'm seeing that clearly. And so you're an unsafe person. All of that, as all of that falls away, then we just get clearer and clearer and clearer about what's going on with us, what's going on with one another, mm-hmm. and we're free then to communicate about, you know, the dishes or which car I'm
right.
going to take or,
right.
you know, those mundane little aspects of life that that we can really trip ourselves up over if
uh-huh.
we're not present.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. You were talking about feedback and how that can be unhelpful. It reminded me of an article I read in the paper about a service. You know, if you're single and I'm looking to find a mate, I can hire a person of the, you know, opposite gender or same gender to go out on a, quote, date with and then get feedback from that.
Ooh. Ooh, isn't that a scary little process?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds scary.
It really does because, it misses.
It misses. And what occurred to me as I was recalling that is, you know, it's not like there are just certain times when we can get information about who we are and how we are in the world. You know, whatever our interaction is, it seems to me we can always get information about who we are and how we are in the world.
Yes. And there are so many aspects to that, aren't there? So you and I are in a conversation and something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from center, you would have one perception of what just happened.
Yeah.
From conditioning, you would have a very different response.
Yeah.
Not only would you have a different response from conditioning, but it would be completely dependent upon which aspect of your personality you were identified mm. with when that happened.
Yes.
So it is so, you know, you're going to go out with somebody and they're going to give you feedback. Well, who are you? And who are they?
Yes.
And how many times would you do this until you got through each of one another's sub-personalities
yes.
and got somewhere close to center? And when you got to center, would there be a problem?
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting mm-hmm. notion. Anybody, my teacher was not a fan of juries.
Uh-huh.
And he had a lot of good points to make on that subject. One is, you know, why are you dragging this group of innocent strangers into your problems? So that's one. Then number two, who are these people?
Uh-huh.
Who are they? A jury of your peers. What the heck does that mean? We're mm-hmm. all human beings. And so, of course, then you get into all these shenanigans by attorneys, you know, trying to, okay, that person can't be on the – and that person can't be, and that person can't be because they're going to hold an incorrect position or they're mm-hmm. going to have an opinion that is, you know – which is an interesting approach. It's one I would certainly take if I were in their shoes.
Yes.
Because we're
yes.
not all looking at life from the same place. So my teacher said he would just choose a judge.
Uh-huh.
Because, number one, the judge has decided to put him or herself in that position and to accept the karma of judging people in
yes.
that way. Because to think that it is without karma is extremely naive.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it is big karma.
Yes.
I am a professional. I am being paid probably pretty well to judge other people. It's very intense.
Yeah.
So why not pick somebody who has decided to take that on and just trust that they know more about it. They're probably going to be as disidentified as anybody. You're really going to have the best chance that you're going to have and just go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So with this idea that I would put myself in a position of being a professional judge of who people are, wow. You know, I would think that that decision would disqualify me. It's kind of like the old, you know,
yes.
anybody who wants to run for president
right.
is disqualified right there.
Yes.
Anybody who has that job should go to it absolutely kicking and screaming and protesting
yes.
and saying,
yes.
all right, I'll do it, but only for 4 years. Don't
yes.
ask me again. Nope.
Yes.
That's the person we
yes.
want in the job.
Yes. Was it Rodney Dangerfield who said, I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member?
Right. Yeah. 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 I think that's been attributed to like Groucho Marx and who's the other W.C. Fields and Woody Allen. And yes. Yes. There it is.
Yes. Yes. Wow.
Now, what the heck were we talking about when we went off on that?
That's a
compassionate communication, wasn't
it? Yes. And I was going to remind people that you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and today we're talking about compassionate communication. Sherry, one aspect of compassionate communication that I'm really interested in is sort of the practical nuts and bolts tips. You know, how do I communicate? What words do I use? What words do I avoid? How do I put them together?
Uh-huh.
What gives me the biggest chance of communicating from center?
Well, of course, what you just said gives us the biggest chance, right? Because you're aware of it. You're conscious. Uh-huh. You're not just assuming that what you're saying is clear, makes sense, is helpful, valid, of interest to anyone. I mean, you're really being careful about how you're doing this. So that's going to put you kind of toward consciousness and toward center right there.
Yes.
And then, of course, my own personal favorite, oh gosh, there are so many actually, but it seems to me like the number one at the top of the list is I statements.
Yes.
That anytime we're talking about you, we're on thin ice.
Yes.
I'm in a conversation and I'm telling you about you and I'm not owning that. I'm not making I statements and using phrases like it is my experience that or it's my projection that you are, you know, then follow that with a you at your own peril. So that seems to me like the top one.
Yes.
And we were talking about this. We can share with them that we talk about these things ahead of time. And one of the ones that you mentioned was the and but thing, which I agree is just, you know, people will say things like a lot of the stuff that I do, people will say, well, you know, you just can't say that to people. I mean, they won't know what you're talking about. They won't understand that. And I was in one of those conversations and somebody said, well, you know, there's also an argument for educating people.
Mm-hmm.
So in the world of writing, of course, people are just in a state over he, she, they.
I see.
We're not going to say he any longer. And so what do we say?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are still clinging to he, you know, and she decided to pick up her fork and she realized that he who hesitates is lost. And, you know, for somebody like me, it's like, where did we go with that thought? But people get paralyzed with, but this is the right way, forgetting that, you know, that, like everything else, is completely made up.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to step out there and receive flack, then we can stop using the word but when we don't mean but and put and when we meet and when we mean and. So, you know, simple you asked me if we can get together to work on this project this evening, and I say, I would love to. And I have something else that I've already planned.
Mm-hmm.
The way we're taught to say it is, I would love to, but – and but really negates everything that goes before it.
Yeah. I remember reading that in I think it was your book for teens, There's Nothing Wrong With You for Teens, how that but just negates that whole first part of the sentence.
Yes, as if that's not true that I would really like to.
Right. And I think as you mentioned in the book – the but says the important information is coming now.
Yes. Yeah. You can snooze through that first part of schmoozing you.
I would love to, But
yeah, now tune in. We just heard a but, so we're going to get the real dope now. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then use but. But if it's not the case, and if it's not the case, use and.
Yeah.
And editors will scream and writhe and carry on, and so be it.
Yes.
We've gone from only instant coffee to only caffeinated, from only caffeinated instant coffee to every kind of coffee a human being would want to consume, mm-hmm. and probably beyond that. So changes happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they happen is that consciousness changes. Awareness,
yes.
We become aware of things,
yes.
That we weren't aware of, mm-hmm. and the importance of those things to us, and then the change happens.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody waits for the change to happen, it's like a friend of mine who talks about everybody who is in the world of social consciousness, everybody's poor waiting for the time when everybody is rich.
Everybody's poor waiting for the time when everyone is rich.
Yeah. So if I'm going to be in solidarity with the poor of the world, mm-hmm. then I need to be poor.
Uh-huh.
Leading to what?
Uh-huh.
How about, I mean, one of my great heroes is Paul Newman. You know, if you want something to be different, then figure out a way to make tons of money. And give those tons of money to the thing that you want to have different.
Mm-hmm.
So if he decided that in order to be in solidarity with the downtrodden, he would give up all of his activities and give his money away or not make any money or whatever, a whole lot of people would not have benefited from his
mm-hmm.
Wisdom and generosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in that way, we make those changes, and we see what follows.
Yes, and in that example with money, it reminds me of your I was going to say workbook, guided journal about
work. You know, Americans are not interested in work. We don't work on ourselves.
Yes.
Yes.
You wrote a guided journal called Sex and Money Are Dirty, Aren't They? And I think in the introduction in there somewhere you talked about not losing our money necessarily, but losing the attachment, the meaning, the grasping around
yes.
money.
Yes, which is really important
mm-hmm.
because it's the only way to ever have money.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't let it go, we never actually have it.
Mm-hmm.
We can hoard a ton of it,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those kinds of notions that people struggle over are in the realm of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So a person would be told, you can't bring consciousness to money. What that means is you won't be able to have any. You'll mm-hmm. have to give it all away, and then you'll have nothing for yourself, and you'll starve to death. Well, mm-hmm. why would you want to bring consciousness to money if
yes.
that's the future?
Yes.
And from center, what we realize is that bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to the subject of money means, number one, you get to have as much as you need. You get to be generous with what is beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And you enter a whole new realm of, if Paul Newman had big money hangups, then he wouldn't be able to do what he's doing.
Yes.
You see, because he would be so busy clinging and fearful and
yes.
guilty and all of those things. But I project that he must have very few money issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can just be completely open-hearted and open-handed and mm-hmm. generous
mm-hmm.
and make a ton of money.
Yes.
A ton.
Yes.
And do with it as he pleases. So bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to any subject is going to run into big resistance from egocentric karmic conditioning, who is that is designed to keep us in a small, little, fearful, anxious, hateful, judgmental, cruel world of suffering.
Yes.
So bringing that kind of awareness to communication, we're going to run into the same kind of resistance because conditioned mind, again, has been in the power position, telling me what to say, how to feel, what they're doing, what I need to do to be all right, how I need to, if I'm going to drop that relationship in order to come back to center and operate from authenticity, that's not going to be popular with conditioned mm-hmm. mind. Mm-hmm. And we need to get over expecting that it will be.
Uh-huh.
It is never going to be popular with conditioned mind for us to awaken and end suffering.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. And for me to even have a notion that there's such a thing as conditioned mind, you know, was a big...
Oh, it's huge.
It's huge.
What are you talking about? I mean, there is mind.
Me.
Where? Yeah, me.
I'm me.
That's right.
Yes.
Where is this conditioned mind? It must be something. I must be, huh? I don't have that experience.
Yes.
And then that moment of, whoa.
Whoa.
Is that what?
Who was that?
Yeah. They, ooh, they mean that? Well, then what else is there?
Yes.
That's me. That's who I am. Yeah. That's how I see the world. Mm-hmm. That's reality. Mm-hmm. So where is this other thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's big. And, of course, again, it's going to be approached with fear and hatred, that kind of awareness from conditioned mind. And as soon as we catch on to who we are and what it is, then it becomes fun and interesting and exciting and, it's mm-hmm. liberation. And
yes.
That's a way more fun place to live.
Yes. Wonderful. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Today, we're not taking calls, so please hold your calls and your questions until Sherry's back with us live. Coming up at 6 p.m. today, we have DJ Decca. She always has great new world music, and then the Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Today we're talking about compassionate communication. It's been exciting so far, and we're going to continue with that. Sherry, I received an email question here that comes into that category. Dear Sherry, thanks for your radio show and archives and the opportunity to ask questions. I had a recent experience of loving and accepting myself just as I am. But now, even though I'm trying to love and be kind to myself, there seems to be a barrier. I can't actually feel the love and kindness like I could before. I've told the person inside that the most important thing in any situation is that she feels loved, and I believe this and want to bring it about. I can't find the right words and attitudes to reach her and help her feel less pressured. Parts of me feel I'm worthless and a failure because I'm not accomplishing enough, not producing enough, not achieving anything. Often these are subtle feelings rather than identifiable thoughts. I want to do or give her whatever it is she wants, but can't hear what that is. I want this person to feel loved and supported, but not having had much experience with this, I don't know what it looks like. It's easy to feel you're doing what this person wants when actually it's what conditioning wants you to be doing. Can you talk about how to discover what the person inside really needs to hear and what kindness might look like in different situations? Thanks for your help from one of our listeners.
Great. Now, the first thing, of course, that I'm going to say is that it's good to get to a there is nothing wrong with you retreat.
Yes.
Which definitely addresses these questions and gives lots of great tools and opportunity to look in depth at those relationships.
Yes.
That said, there's a piece of it that I want to address before kind of getting at what I consider to be the heart of the matter. And that is that it is true that we have various personalities who are stuck in all kinds of places of suffering. They're usually quite young. And even if they appear as older, they're generally just older versions of those originally injured, wounded, small people.
Yeah.
And the way we can recognize that that's what we're dealing with is that aspects of the personality, subpersonalities, want to be helped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that we point out about subpersonalities is that they want everything under the sun. So, you know, this one wants a new sports car. This one wants just to eat ice cream all day. This one wants to sleep all day. This one wants to be the president. This one, okay. And what each one of them needs is unconditional love and acceptance, which is true for all of us. You know, we're walking around in our lives all day long, and we want everything under the sun. And all we really want and care about is unconditional love and acceptance.
Yes.
And when we have that, we kind of lose interest in these other things. You know, a completely loved person might enjoy a sports car, but doesn't have to have it, isn't miserable not having it. It would be fun. It would be icing on the cake, but it's not going to make the difference for a person who is truly unconditionally loved. So that's aspects of the personality. Now, we have this other thing, this that we talk about in Buddhism in different ways. We talk about it as egocentric karmic conditioning, sometimes just karma. Sometimes we'll call it hungry ghosts. Lots of ways of trying to point at this force that exists in life that does not wish us well, is suffering, wants to suffer, wants us to suffer, is like a parasite to life. It sucks life force out of people. And that force does not want to be helped, does not want unconditional love and acceptance. In fact, will laugh in your face if you try to provide it and say mean and ugly things to you. So it's important as we're doing this work to get a sense of who we're dealing with. Now, aspects of the personality don't necessarily just melt at the first compassionate glance, because we're talking about injury and years and old and that sort of thing. So sometimes it can take a while to build trust, because most of us are pretty good at saying things like, I'll always be there for you, and then 15 seconds later get distracted and forget we ever said it. So it takes a while to build that kind of trust in any relationship.
Yes.
So that said, then to return to kind of the core of the thing, the transformative aspect of this work that we do is not that that subpersonality, let's assume that that is a subpersonality who has a deep need to feel loved and cared for. It's not giving that unconditional love to that subpersonality and having that subpersonality receive it that is the transformation for us. It is moving into center, coming back to our heart, our authentic nature. Let me try that again. It's coming back to our authentic nature that makes the difference. That transforms us. And that's what practice actually is. Does that make sense?
Coming back to our authentic nature.
Yes.
Rather than going to the subpersonality and giving that aspect of ourself.
Yes.
Love and acceptance.
Yes. If we do that, that's wonderful. And that'll make the subpersonality feel better. You know, that'll heal a part of the personality that has been suffering. But the transformation happens when, instead of choosing conditioned mind, we come back to center and become that unconditionally loving and accepting nature in order to embrace someone who is suffering into that. That's the real work.
Bringing that aspect of our personality into our center.
Yes.
Into our authentic nature.
After we have chosen to live from center. So what will transform me is that instead of something happens and I identify with a part of me who gets angry or sad or disappointed or upset and lashes out and attacks somebody or criticizes somebody or retreats or withdraws, instead of doing that and perpetuating that kind of karma, there is that moment of conscious awareness and the choice to come back to center, to choose compassionate acceptance over conditioned mind. That's what transforms this life. Now, after that choice is made, and as that choice is made increasingly, then more and more is embraced into that compassion. In fact, anything that wants to come into compassion is welcome to come into that compassionate center.
Yes.
So now we no longer have a Sherry Huber who is identified with a small self who suffers. We have something that actually isn't Sherry Huber any longer.
Yes.
Is conscious, compassionate awareness in the form of what people look at and see as Sherry Huber.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what we're doing in this work. So the person who's writing in, what she's doing is practicing coming back to that compassionate awareness. It's not a matter of, oh, you didn't do it, you failed.
Uh-huh.
It's, I will keep coming here. I will keep saying it. So I have a dog who has been abused. I have a child who has been abused. And now this child is in my care. And it's been, you know, either of these little critters has been really wounded. There's no trust. There's no openness. Mm-hmm. There's fear. There's all kinds of stuff going on. I'm not going to go up to this little being and say, okay, you can trust me now. I love you unconditionally.
Yes.
And then wait for them to fall into my open arms. It might take a long time to come up with the right combination of words, to be present enough to. Mm-hmm. And of course, it has nothing to do with what we're saying or doing. It has to do with being in that centered place.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a person learns to trust. Okay, if I'm around somebody and every time I'm around them, all I get is unconditional love and acceptance, well, pretty soon I'm going to start relaxing. Okay?
Yes.
But it only takes once or twice
of
being open and relaxed and having the boom fall for me to say,
No.
So that transformative process that we're going through is going to require us to be patient, to be kind, to be loving, to be accepting of whatever is going on with the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Patient, loving, accepting, kind, over and over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
Because what we're learning to do is be that. We're not doing it so that we'll get a result.
Uh-huh.
And as long as we want a result, so there's that child, that abused child, and I'm over here, you know, tapping my fingers, waiting for this child to be open to all this unconditional love and acceptance that I want to give. Well, the child knows intuitively that this is not coming from a clean place.
Yes.
I'm not going to be open to that.
It's conditional.
It's conditional, exactly. It's only when I get to that place where there are no strings attached, there's nothing else going, we can do this forever. I don't care. Just this is plenty for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then trust can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something that the writer said in there that kind of made me suspicious that she might want to be looking in the direction of conditioned mind, because it was phrased something like, there are parts of me who feel like, what does that piece
Let's
of it say?
See.
Down toward the end of it. There are parts of me who feel like I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm. I can't find the right words and attitudes to reach her and help her feel less pressured. Parts of me feel I'm worthless and a failure because I'm not accomplishing enough, not producing enough, not achieving anything. Often these are subtle feelings rather than identifiable thoughts.
Yeah. Now, this is a subtle I-you relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a part of me who felt like a failure, but not because of what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. So when I hear that, there's a part of you who feels like it's a failure because you, Michael, are not doing more.
Uh-huh.
This smacks of conditioned mind.
Yes.
Because if it's an aspect of the personality, it's only talking about its own experience. I feel like a failure.
Uh-huh.
And then it's possible to say, well, tell me more about that. What feels like failure? What? And this aspect of the personality really wants to be reassured that I'm really not a failure. But if there's somebody in there who's saying, I feel like a failure because you're not doing more, want to be careful of that one.
Uh-huh.
It's very subtle stuff. Again, you know, we have to be interested in the transformation of what we call ourselves more than results. Uh-huh. Because if we're interested in results, if we want all these folks to be happy and, you know, we get a good report card, then, again, the motivation is going to take us to a place of disappointment.
I see. So in this example, trying to meet the standards of somebody who's deciding success or failure in the long run is not going to be helpful.
It is not going to be helpful. And I suspect that that's somebody who is not going to be open to being talked out of their experience because it's egocentric karmic conditioning trying to make her suffer.
Yes, yes.
That the standards will just keep changing. You know, it's that vague, I'm really unhappy. You know, if you're in a relationship with somebody and they say things like, I'm really unhappy, you say, well, what are you unhappy about? Well, I'm just really unhappy. I mean, how long would you have that conversation before it occurred to you that maybe being unhappy is what they want?
Uh-huh.
Because if I'm unhappy and you say, what are you unhappy about? I'm going to try to engage in a conversation about that. You know, well, what's going on with you? What does that unhappiness feel like? Okay? Because I'm interested in solving this problem.
Yes.
I'm interested in getting to another place. If I'm not, then that's when we start looking for egocentric karmic conditioning at the root of that.
Right. There's an investment in unhappiness.
Yes. And you're not going to change me.
Uh-huh.
You know, I am not going to be happy, and I'm going to blame you for it as long as you're going to fall for it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, of course, I, you know, become very cold-hearted about the whole thing and just say, walk off in that conversation. Go have a conversation with somebody who wants to converse with you, not somebody who just wants to pull you into suffering.
Uh-huh. Yes. And the word that's coming up for me is self-hate.
Oh, yeah.
Around all this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in that situation, I have a part of me who feels like I'm a failure, and I'm trying to be successful enough that that person is not going to say that. But if all that person says is, you're a failure, then we need to end the conversation. This is not compassionate conversation.
Yes. It's not dependent on getting any particular input or meeting any standards.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Fascinating. You're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford with Sherry Huber. We're not taking your calls today. We're having a pre-recorded show on compassionate communication. So give us a call when we're back live on the air. Sherry, I see you've brought a CD with you today.
I have a CD with me today. And I was away for a while, and my mail gets sort of backed up at the monastery, and I got this package, and I was actually doing an email class and a retreat at the same time. So, the schedule was a little tight. And I opened this up, and it's very sweet, isn't it? It's a great cover.
Yes.
And it's the title of it is Splash, and its subtitle is Bath Time and Bedtime Music for Grown-Up Girls. And I thought, well, why not? And so I put it on and started listening to a little of it. And I've told people at the retreat about this because I'm so very taken with it. And what I said to them is, and this is not a statement about anything or anyone else, okay? It's just that generally speaking, I don't enjoy music. I used to enjoy music. I used to enjoy reading. There are a lot of things that I used to enjoy doing before awareness practice. Now, you know, I can just hear people going, oh, my God, I've got to quit because I love to read and I love music. And if I keep doing awareness practice, then I'm going to have to give those up and I don't want to. It wasn't like that. It's just that for an extended period of time, I did not do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I returned to an ability to do those things, read, got out of the monastery, I realized that I no longer enjoyed reading things that take me to another place because I would rather be present. I no longer enjoy things like music because of the way it affects my body, the sensations that it produces, and tendency, unless I'm sitting right there listening to it, mm-hmm. the tendency for it to trigger conditioned patterns and cause emotional responses and this sort of thing that I'm not interested in having.
Yes.
So when I do listen to music, that's all I do. It's never on as background or
right.
that sort of it's setting a mood because it will. And the mood I want is present to what is. So I put this on and began to listen, and I was entranced. I have now, there might be a ton of things out there like this, but I've never heard anything
mm-hmm.
like it.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, whose name I actually cannot pronounce. You know, I just hate to botch it.
Trish Bruxvoort Colligan.
You think it's Bruxvoort? Yeah, well, that's a courageous stab at it.
Uh-huh.
And Trish.
Trish.
Is just, in my view, extremely talented. And what she has done is taken the practice of conscious, compassionate awareness and put it with delightful lyrics to delightful music. And as I listened to it, I thought, you know, it's bath time and bedtime music for grown-up girls, but with a couple of exceptions. I think it would work really well for grown-up boys as
uh-huh.
well. And in fact, they might enjoy those exceptions as much as possibly the girls do. You know, when I'm working with people, whether it's here, email classes or in retreats or workshops or whatever, the great difficulty is, what do you do for support when you're attempting to break out of egocentric karmic conditioning, get into the present? Ego is just fighting you tooth and nail. The entire society is against you. There is nothing supporting you in waking up and ending suffering.
Yes.
Just darn near nothing.
Yes.
And so you're trying to meditate and you're reading the right things, but it's really, really hard. And when you come home from a miserable day, the temptation to go in there and turn on that TV and start looking for some distraction can be, from what I gather, overwhelming.
Yes.
And I want to offer this as an alternative. It is, for me, just the most delightful way to take in the information that we want to hear. And so the email that you received is perfect.
Yes.
Because I would offer this to that writer as a way of helping discover what those folks inside
mm-hmm.
want and need,
mm-hmm.
because the music is all about, it's called, the subtitle to it is An Invitation to Radical Self-Love.
Uh-huh.
And the fourth song on here, in fact, is with augmentation, snappy lyrics and
uh-huh.
not snappy lyrics. They're very sincere,
yes.
But kind of a great music is an ancient Buddhist sutra.
Uh-huh.
That I've done for years in
uh-huh.
workshops about I have a body and I am not my body. I have emotions and I am not my emotions.
Uh-huh.
And she just does a wonderful version of that.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's all about opening the heart, coming back to the heart, remembering who you are, choosing conscious, compassionate awareness,
mm-hmm.
embracing the suffering into – it's just – I just – can't say enough. So it's called Splash.
Splash.
And their website, she does it with her husband. And the card that I got that accompanied this was created by their son, Sam, who is two, which was very fun. Their www.raindance.net.
Raindance.net.
Yeah. www.raindance.net.
I see Rain Dancer here.
Ooh, okay, put an R on that.
Raindancer.net.
Raindancer.net. Trish, go ahead, Michael.
Bruxvoort Colligan.
Bruxvoort?
Yes.
Dash C-O-O-L?
I-G-A-N. No dash.
Oh.
Trish Bruxvoort Colligan.
They're dashless.
They're dashless.
Yeah, so I actually have this fantasy. You know, we're getting ready to do that. We're really getting ready to do that big event in October.
And, tell me more about that big event.
The big Compassion Works event, the
yes.
day of meditation and prayer for peace, and a big, huge introduction of Living Compassion to the world. And then, of course, we have the evening event, wonderful festivities with a silent auction. And I have a fantasy about inviting Trish and her husband, Richard, to come and do music for us, if they would bring Sam, of course.
Of course.
And then, of course, we have the bridge walk for the vulnerable children on Sunday.
Yes.
So it's a huge, huge party.
Can I give some dates, locations?
Oh, please.
Website?
Yes, please.
Saturday, October 23rd, Herbst Pavilion in Fort Mason in San Francisco, right on the bay there. In the evening, African drumming.
And dancing.
And dancing.
And some other fun things that
some
we're putting together.
Some other fun things. Sunday, October 24th, third annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk to support the African Vulnerable Children Project.
Yes.
Information at livingcompassion.org.
Yeah, there's so many fun, interesting, exciting things coming up with those projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's grand, isn't
it? It's big.
It's big.
It gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and so, of course, I'm hoping people will fly in from all over the world for that weekend because we don't have that many Sangha parties. And
and this is one of
this
them.
This is definitely one of them, a chance to all just get together and celebrate our practice and the possibilities that we see for the world and for our own lives and the rest of the world and be together and just do some good.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, you mentioned in response to the email question about the TINW retreats, and I just wanted to give the email web address for that, which is www.thezencenter.org. Again, that's the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats at thezencenter.org. Great.
Something for everybody.
Something for everybody.
You know, and it's all the same thing, isn't it?
It's all
whether
something.
It's listening to Trish's music or whether it's going up to the monastery for a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, whether it's an email class, the radio show, everything we're doing is an attempt to end suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up, have some support for being here, getting here into the kindness and unconditional acceptance of the present and like that.
Yes.
So I just want to say that I appreciate your contribution to that.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a joy to be here. Thanks for showing up every week.
Oh, my pleasure.
Big willingness. We're coming to the end of our hour here, Sherry. Do you have some homework for our listeners?
Oh, my gosh.
In the spirit of compassionate communication.
Yeah. I think the homework would be to start inside, because that's where compassionate communication really, really begins, as our email writer indicated. And maybe just once a day, even, to have a kind conversation with oneself.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Practice right there.
Yes.
We didn't finish all those tips. We got partway through them. We didn't get to not using always and never.
Yes.
We didn't get to...
As in, why do you always leave the dishes, leave your clothes on the floor, whatever.
Yes. Why don't you ever... right. Yeah. So there are some more of those. And if people are interested, we could probably pull together a list of those.
Yes. And some of them are listed at the end of There's Nothing Wrong With You for Teens.
Mm.
There's a section there.
Right. And so if people could get that book for the teen within, right? We'd probably love to have somebody finally understand them instead of just trying to outgrow them.
Yes. Yes. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Today was a pre-recorded show. If you want to contact us before Sherry's live again, drop us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the shows are available at Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Stay tuned for DJ Decca in a couple minutes and then the Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.